Hello, everyone. Welcome to Blind Spots. I'm your host, Gail McDonald, and I'm here today with a very special guest. The topic of Blind Spots today is finding our own way, gutted by grief, after losing your child. And I'm so happy to be here with my very best friend, who joined me on our online talk show that we co-hosted a couple of years ago now, and we had a really good run of close to 2 years. Susan Sneath has an ongoing habit of bringing visions to life for herself and now for her career coaching clients. Both of us became fast friends and colleagues because we dared to find our own way. Susan and I have been friends for about 15 years. Susan is also an award-winning actress, a cancer survivor, and as I mentioned, co-host of The Change Zone, which was an internet TV show, by the way, found on Bold Brave TV network. And not only that, but she's also climbed the highest mountain in Europe, which, no small feat, no pun intended. And she's now a grandmother of nine. So I was wondering, Susan, if you were the grandmother of nine after you climbed the mountain. I sure hope so, because that's a little risky. Susan is also known for her amazing ability to shift perceptions, build forward, move forward, to meet folks where they are, be supportive, and laugh. And it's infectious. The more Susan laughs, the more I laugh. So welcome, my friend, to be back in the saddle with you again, as if it's our own talk show. It's going to be a little different for me, I think, because I'm you're my guest today. And so I just feel like I have to maybe sit back a little in the wings. But I know you shared with me that you have another opinion on that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the things I love about connecting with you, Gail, is our intention is the same, to welcome folks in whatever place of change, etc., they're in. And then share. And so one of the things we did regularly was you would come forward with one thing, and then I'd go, yes. And then I would say, and yet I don't agree. Oh, because I can. And so when you said, so it's got to be this way, I've got to be the host, and you've got to be the person who answers, I go, well, actually, Gail, in episode 53, because I did my research.
Which you do very well.
That's what friends do. We wrote, they hold space for each other. Listen, converse, and share the investigation of the territory of the heart. And so that because we could, it means we can continue to do that. And so today we have the awesome and awful privilege of sharing this territory of the heart. And so to me, my sense is that we'll weave it together.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You are definitely a wordsmith. I hang on your every word. And I so appreciate how you do weave those messages, because you make it so easy to enter in. And territory of the heart, this topic doesn't get any deeper when it comes to territory of the heart. And I remember that day, Susan, that you called me and you shared with me that your son had passed.
Yeah. Unfathomable.
Very much, yeah. And I just felt it was disbelief. I felt helpless and hopeless. And my first instincts were, what can I do for someone that I love so much that I have no idea what they're going, excuse me, what they're going through? That thought, that's all I remember. Like our dialogue after that, I really can't remember. And I just felt so honored, though, that on that same day, you did call me, and we didn't talk long. And then I hung up and I went, now what? Now what? And there's no answer. And I remember you saying to me, this is one thing I remember. I hope you never have to experience this. And I thought, okay. It was a statement. It came and it went. And then 2 months and about 3 days later, I'm calling you, sharing the same news. And that to me was then unfathomable. And that it was unbelievable. It was just, there's no words to describe it. And I do know that we had the space. I also felt that I had to give you space at the same time I was needing space. And there was no manual, there was no playbook for this. And people that know the both of us intimately are our work colleagues, and they were in such disbelief as well. And so today, as you said, it's awesome and it's awful. We are here to share with everyone what that was like, that experience, and just to perhaps offer hope. I mean, everyone will walk away with something different.
Well, they will, because that's the piece of grief and grieving that ultimately we will hold, is that each of us is unique, and therefore our grief and grieving will be unique. I am noting we are using the word unfathomable a lot because it's the biggest word I know. It is so, the sense of time, the sense of tenderness, like vulnerability, sensitivity, like whoa. And then I remember you offered me your heart and heart space as it happened for me and my son Matthew, and then gave me space to find my way through, and our families did. And then when we heard about your wonderful son Colin dying suddenly as well, we go, what the what the what? What the what the what? And we had dear friends of both of us on both sides saying, why does that happen to two such nice women? Why could that happen? Why does that happen? And I remember as I heard about Colin, I was out walking with my oldest granddaughter, who's quite wise. And I heard the news and I went, oh, seriously, really crappy plot. In my background, I'm an actress. You just go, whoever wrote this one flunked big time and you don't get to write anymore. It was such a like, what? And I said to London, my granddaughter, I said, people are asking why. And she goes, yeah, that's not the right question. The right question is not, why did this happen? The right question is, how do we take the next breath? And
So true.
that is what we have been doing, and how we can continue to share and explore this time.
Yeah, the why question has never appealed to me, because there's nothing we can do about something that has already passed. Something is, it happens, it's over, there's no going back. And I can recall not having those thoughts really about why. As we speak about it, I really didn't say, well, why him? Why anybody? there isn't really an answer. And I appreciate what you say about what do we do next? How do we get out of bed in the morning? How do we shower? How do we make a meal? How do we be without them? I wasn't at that place in my grief where I had thought about being without him because truly the reality had not yet settled into my brain. The groove of him was still being there. I would look at my phone, I would expect a text. And so it's just I have learned through a few grieving books that that's how it works. And it was foggy is the word that came to mind right now. It was
Oh
just,
yeah.
it was very cloudy. It was very misty.
Oh yeah.
And it's,
Seriously.
yeah, exactly. And I still do, I'm still in awe about you saying that. And here we are. And that to me has shifted our friendship. And I hesitate to say deeper. It's not about depth. I feel our relationship has depth. But there's an unexplainable connection and a love and an acceptance. And the space grows larger. We didn't connect every day. Sometimes I don't think we connected for months. But the odd time you or I would send a little heart, a little emoji, something. And I think I recall once I said, think of you every day. That was it. Because getting a text message, it's you're not even reading it. It's like the words just fall off the off your phone.
To me, what was really important, Gail, was we had each other to witness. I already was a couple of months into this form of deep grieving. And I'm just going to say for me, the bond I had created with my son was so strong. Like you and I would often joke when we were doing the change zone, we can be doing this, that, and the other thing. But if we get a call from our kids, we just go, okay, just a second, I just have to go and check that out. And so to know that both of us had lost a child and it's someone you have habituated yourself to being attentive to where they are, attentive to they may be getting into misadventures, attentive to
Our place?
celebrating, making the
No.
space, right? Attentive. So suddenly, when their physical presence is not on earth, there is a sense of what the, it's like you're noticing the absence. You go, oh, and then where do we find them again? And to begin to explore that. And so I knew that because I remember you saying to me at first, I don't know if it's going to be okay for you to, if I visit with you, it may trigger you. And I went, oh, no triggering. Seriously. I'm in the water. I'm in the pool. I get it. You need to share. You share. You don't need to share. Take care. Need space. One of the things I ended up doing was I joined some resource groups on grieving, one in person and one online, and they introduced me to a feelings wheel for grief. So I have the thing, and you can always put a link to it
I'll do
later.
that.
And I would write down a small thing. I would check in with myself every day and go, where am I today? So I will know what I need. And then, as you would speak, I learn that language a little bit better. And I would go, oh, that's what you may need. And just be the listening person. To mostly we want to let the other person know you're not wacko. You may be feeling like, whoa, I'm certainly doing some unusual things, but you're not at fault, unhinged. This is a norm as norms go, and it is a norm to be kind of in the dark and yet have the company.
Yeah, I love that. That to me is about acceptance. Once I feel that this is the norm and it's about my norm, not anybody else's norm, then I start to accept and make some sense of it. And what's coming to mind for me is that piece that I shared with you in The Grieving Brain by Mary Frances O'Connor about resilient grieving versus complicated grieving. And you and I had a meeting on this, and we discussed what that means. How does it happen? How do we get there? Or if we're already resilient, does it make a difference? And we came to, I think, Susan, a mutual conclusion where we did feel that even though we were gutted beyond belief, that we have found a way to grieve with resilience. And I'm just wondering what you would like to add to that, just
I
to your
love that.
thoughts on
Oh, I
it.
love that. Okay. So then, to me, it is to achieve resilience, to know there's a little step I can take, another little step. Okay. And so then to get there, I know there's a wonderful police officer who I met as my son had died, and he said to me so kindly, he said, feel everything. And I went, okay. And then I began to, and I think I don't know whether I showed you this, but I started writing down my thoughts, Gail. Seriously, I'm on my fourth book. Honestly,
You
seriously.
just took a few notes then, did
I
you?
just took a note or two. And I was looking back at my notes and I wrote down, feeling this officer so and so, feeling this, okay. And so to me, I needed to embrace rumination, Gail. And I was going over certain things that would play back. And I would take them. And I would write it down in the book. And then I would leave. I would walk. I would go away. I would. And then I would come back. I would look at it again and say, is it true? I'm good, it's true. Does it hurt like stink? It does. Are you ready to stop it hurting? No. And I'd note that down, date it, go off, come back again. And then I would allow myself, invite myself again to go. So, are you feeling this? Yeah. Does it hurt like stink? Yeah. Is it productive? Not exactly. Are you ready to see if we could figure out, not if someone else could tell, but if I could start writing a conversation, is there a different way we could shift this? And so, as I would have some of them, some of the ruminations come, I would also note, Is there something of that scenario that I noted that has changed, has shifted? Is there another way I could see it? Is there someone else who was feeling it? If I could open my vision a little bit. Right? It's almost like talking with a friend and they go over and over the same problem. And once they've done it three times, you say, how about we make a deal that until you've done something about it, let's chill. So I would notice, have I taken some time to breathe? Have I taken some time to get some physical exercise? Go outside. Right? What is that doing? And slowly allow the ruminations to become reflections, and then slowly allow some flexibility come, begin to go, this is where I am, this is what I'm working towards. This is where I choose to, for example, meet the pain. So to just know it just really, really hurts. So it does, and for now, see if I can be in the present of it really, really hurting. And then slowly, that will allow something to move and to not know what. I see hope not as will it get better. I see hope as simply saying yes to life. So I'm living. How can I say yes to this? And the pain doesn't, it's a wave form. It doesn't stay, even though it feels like it stays.
I love what you said about ruminating and then reflecting. And then what did you say after that? Do you remember? There was one more thing, but I didn't write it down. I didn't hold on to it. But even still, that what I get from what you said is that, well, there's no way out of feeling it. We're going to feel it. And thank goodness emotions move through us. And so they ebb and they flow. They're like waves. I think you mentioned that. And in that moment, it's almost unbearable sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But to know that I had a choice, and reflecting back now, I did some days, I just chose to feel miserable. A good friend of Colin's made a playlist of all his favorite music. She sent it to me. And I would go for a walk and I would put that playlist on. And there were days when I would walk faster and I felt great. And there were days where I would cry walking down the street because it was unbearable. I could have turned it off, the music. I could have turned it off. I didn't. I chose to just sit in it. And a phrase someone shared with me was, there is no way to it but through it. And if that's how I have to feel to get through it, then I will do just that. And as you have, Susan, you've researched grief, you've read a couple of great books, which we'll share with the viewers before we leave today. And one of them I found particularly helpful because it discussed more of the scientific aspects of it. I like to know how things work. I like to know if I've got a challenge, what can I do? Sometimes I just sit on my pants and have a think. But this one just really made some sense of it. And I did learn from it, and it's my perspective. Other people may read it and get something totally different, but that our brain and our mind really does have two different perspectives of grief. And it really laid it out nicely for me. And I won't go into a lot of detail about it because there's other things that we have yet to cover, but it made such a difference and it gave me something to focus on as to, okay, so before Colin's passing, this is how I was. I liked to know. I'm super curious. I love to do research. And why would that change after his passing? And how can I support myself through this? Did that happen all the time? Heck no. Still days where I fell apart and I put shoes on the wrong feet, metaphorically speaking, by the way, and I had cereal for supper because I could. Didn't feel like cooking. Still don't, but 2 years later, but I don't like cooking at the best of times. To know that there's two things. To know that how I felt yesterday may not return for a while, so it's not going to be as long, but to also accept the fact that in another period of time, I could feel that same way. So, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, you and I have both seen this grief cycle or circle. And I've been reading some other articles and books about there's a bit of a misinterpretation with grief that as we go through and as time goes on and that loved one has passed from our view, they're not in their physicality anymore, that things just continually get better every day. It's kind of like climbing a mountain, as you're so familiar with. You climb, you look down, you go, okay, I'm doing good. Then you climb higher, and then you look down, you go, I'm doing better. And your goal is to get to the top. To me, there's no top to grieving. There's no end to grieving. It just changes form. And yet I do feel very strongly with all my heart that for the most part, I do have control over that. And after being 2 long years without Colin, yet sometimes it feels like yesterday, that I am learning more about grief. And I must say, life is good. I can feel joy and I can feel happiness, and he's not going to mind. Why would he mind, right? Kids want their parents to be happy, and they've decided to go elsewhere. And now, my job is to be happy for those that are still here, including myself, because I don't want to be the curmudgeon of the family. And when our family gets together, we reminisce, we laugh, sometimes we cry a little bit. But for the most part, I just really want to say our family was really effective at space for each other, understanding we don't all grieve the same way, and just checking in gently. And so I'm very grateful for that. And I've developed this attitude of just taking each day as it comes. And as the book says, don't sweat the small stuff. Because it's all small stuff. Like nothing compares to what you and I have experienced. However, we've chosen to grieve with resilience, I think.
Now, Gail, what this also means to me as you were talking about gently allowing the joy to come inside of you. When we're feeling the grief, I feel like it is going right out to the edges of my body and beyond. It's like the sensitivity goes right through me, and it's uncomfortable. I'm going to be candid. It's uncomfortable. There are sounds like, go, excuse me, ow, ow. And yet, as the ebb and flow comes, as I write down my little journalist, what I'm feeling, what do I need to do to process that? Do I need quiet time? Do I need exercise? Do I need writing, debriefing my day? Where were the glimmers? And so then I began to understand the power of looking and noticing the glimmers, the little glints, the light bouncing off, the bird going hop, hop, hop. And then resting in it. expanding it a little bit, and then hooking it into the state of grief that I'm in. So that as I got the other, any ruminations that would come, or simply, holy doodle, the waves of grief that would come, as I would be there, I'd also go, and yet, just outside of, as I'm holding my hands, little so you can't see them anymore, my hands still exist. So just outside of that are also glimmers, and I can begin to surround my son with light. I can really notice the wisdom of our supportive community, and including the wisdom of my youngest grandson, whose dad Matthew was. And he said to his mom, he was four, he said, "Mom, daddy died." And she goes, "Yeah." And he said, "But I can still be happy."
Oh, wow.
And you go, "Yeah, you can." And then he went to some play therapy, and the therapist said, "How you doing?" And he said, "Mostly happy, a little bit sad." And then I asked him, "What does that look like?" And he said, "Well, the happy's yellow, the sad is blue." And he said, "Oh," he calls me Nini. He said, "Oh, Nini. And then there's lots of pink. That's silly. Lots of silly around there." And as I said to my daughter later, Molly, I said, "This is what we need to honor. Yes, a little one said this, but it was wise. And so let's notice where can we go safely into the place of grieving. To me, it's like a portal and a beautiful blue, like we end up wearing today. Talk about matching, honestly.
Shocking.
And seriously, and then return. So to give ourselves that spaciousness, and every day when I write in my journal, goes, "What do you need?" I put first spaciousness. I need some space to be able to receive what we are doing. And I was wanting to ask you a question as we're into this. Then, therefore, what is the difference, Gail, between overcoming and experiencing? Because people will sometimes say, "You got to get over it. It's done." So this is where time marches in.
Experience and overcoming. That's a tough one. Initially, I have about six things that I've thought of, or multiple things have come up.
Do it.
By the time I get through the first one, though, the other five might be gone, so I'll tell. I'll do my best. But experience is, firstly, I think about, is experience something to be overcome? Why? Because to me, overcoming is to overcoming. It's a couple of things. It's To me, it sometimes feels like if I overcome something, I will forget about it. It's a done deal. Colin is not a done deal. Colin is still with me always. I speak of him in the present tense. He's a huge part of our lives. He's just not here. It's not like he never existed. So I'm not even fond of overcoming. And how does that even help me? The experience, like I said, it's not something to overcome. It's something to me to embrace. And part of my resilient grieving was embracing the fact that that I was his mom. And I remember him saying once that I chose you as my mama. I'm like, whoa, that could have been
What were
scary.
you
Yeah,
thinking?
exactly, right? And I was so touched by that. And but he's in another form. And this is just my own opinion, but it's my thoughts that make me truly feel good. It's, a couple of people had said to me, well, are you in denial because you seem so happy? And it's like, well, no, I'm not denying he's dead, because he is. At least that's what the doctor said. So yeah, he's gone. There's no denial. It's very much in my face, but it's like I feel him in a different way. And that's the best I can say. There's an illustration I saw on social media where there were four jars and this little ball all tangled up inside. The first jar was very tiny and it was about grief, like the little ball was grief. And the fourth jar was m much bigger. And so the grief looked smaller, but it was just an illusion. And the line was, our grief doesn't get smaller, we just grow around it. And I know that it's dangerous for me to say, oh, it's been 2 years and I'm feeling great. And today I am. And I'm grateful for that. Tomorrow, maybe not so much. So I love experiencing different things. I don't know if it's even necessary to overcome because it's so much a part of who we are. And you and I shared a little bit about this. It's coming to mind now about how we see things differently. And after we talked about that, I thought, yeah. And I looked around and I went, the trees are greener. The birds are more beautiful. There, things do look different. And again, it's just me. And I wouldn't expect anybody to feel or think the same way I do, but it's just that I am starting to feel, let me word that appropriately. I'm starting to feel a newfound strength, and a newfound clarity because of the intensity of what I needed to experience with losing him. Well, I shouldn't say losing him because I just said he's still around somewhere, right? But his death has made me, I think, a different version of myself, maybe who I really was supposed to be. I don't know. It's confusing to me. So I don't know if it sounds confusing to other people, but there really aren't any logical ways to explain it. But I'm starting to feel more intentional, more purposeful, more joyful, and I feel like the waves are a little less intense. And we talked about intensity too. So I think Susan, maybe now it's time to kind of volley that back to you, because the question was, does the intensity, that we had talked about, does the intensity ever change?
Yeah, I love that question. When we met a couple of weeks ago, you asked, does the intensity change? Okay. Well, my sense is anew. If anything, it gets more. Is the bad news. Okay. However, it is shorter in duration.
Okay.
So, because I'm feeling more, so my joy is stronger, my peace is stronger, my trust in myself is stronger. I am honestly, seriously, Gail, I'm over 70 and I suddenly am an optimist. I go, what? I go, I don't know. I've had depression as a companion my whole life. And with doing this work, that's part of why I knew the wisdom that my grandson said when he said, my dad died, but I can still be happy. I said, you bring that on because we bring in the joy. I'm feeling it even more. So I'm feeling more centered, more still, more energetic. and so forth. And I am deeply respectful, which is willingness to look again, of grief. That it comes to me, I use the word unfathomable. Sometimes I've called it like being at an ocean and you're standing on a cliff. So you're pretty high up, and a whale jumps out of the ocean and you're eyeball to eyeball. You go, that's big. And that is
Would be.
sometimes how my grief will come to me as we talk about, I call it Matthew's continuation day, birthday, family gatherings, a time even, because I also choose. I love this one question. One of the support groups I was in, it said, here's a question for you. How does my grief need me to see the person who has died? I thought, what? It goes, yeah. How does, not how do you, but how does your grief need you to see the person who has died? So then I could go in there and go, all right, I have come up with some ideas and I've found that they're quite productive. However, they also cause me to open into changes in my life and go, sometimes those really hurt. Sometimes it's like breaking out of a shell. And you go, crack, and you go, oh, it just kind of hurts, but it feels better as I move through it. And so to honor as well, I know my daughter is what I call my canary in the mind, in the mine. And so Molly will say to me, Mom, such and such a time is coming up. We probably want to book off a few days. I go, oh yeah, oh, okay. And then notice a year in, oh yeah, we had to block off that week and a half. Another year passes. I'm pretty good. And yet, a couple of days after that week, I set aside. I noticed one day my brain didn't work, Gail, and I just went, whoa. I had an appointment, and I had to book it because suddenly my brain wouldn't absorb it. So there are times when the brain will shut down. That lovely, logical, this is the way it is, mind. And to understand it's momentary, this is a time. And for you as well, I know that you've shared that it's different, but we're bigger, so everything's bigger. What do you think about that, Gail?
Well, I think that is really quite a robust piece of information you've just shared, and I always appreciate how you do that. Well, mostly what I can say is I do agree, and yet there's more, right? But what I'm thinking about now, and I'm not certain how relevant this is, Susan, or where the connection comes from. But again, we did say that this might be a little bit natural or organic for viewers and for us to not have it so tightly scripted. And I'm just wondering about how the, and this is from the Grieving Brain book, how the presence of absence. That's what's coming to me right now is, about you talking about Molly and her being your yellow canary to say, hey, we need to do a shift here. And how might you define what that means to you, that presence of absence, because absence is still something. It doesn't
Oh,
mean
yeah.
that it's gone, but it's just not there now. So the
Yeah, I liked
yeah.
where in that book, The Grieving Brain, she talks about how you have a spot in you that goes and tends things and then comes back. So that's what I had ended up, because I only just read the book recently, and that reminds me of where I have come to, because I do feel I speak of Matthew in the present tense. I note I have certain touchstones, so I have a little disc with lots of love written in his handwriting and his name, Matthew, and that is kind of, if I need to just hold on to something, I can hold on to that. I'm a very physical person, and so sometimes I will use a toy as a tool if I need to hold a thing. And that was what Chris Hartstein, Healed People Heal People, talked about in episode 66, using toys as tools. And then to understand, he is, I have settled that he's living in the rhythm of my breath. So I will do certain physical exercises that he taught me. I'll go, "You're here." And as I'm breathing, I feel you. I note that he is, I tend to see him, that he's seeing his children grow. And so I just delight in the playfulness that they express. And I have chosen, when it said, "How does my grief need me to see the person who I lost?" Then I go, "I, actually, it hurts enough as it is. I'm not going to say I wish he could see this. I'm going to screw that. If I get to imagine how he is, and he's not coming up through the carpet to say I'm not, then I'm bringing in that he's seeing it. He's seeing it. And so then, what does that? What? How do I open with that? Right? And so, to me, it is honoring it and then finding out, because I'm like you, I'm a scientist. I want to know, how does this help? Does it help me live more in the day? Sometimes I will say, it's just, today I'm going to call him the breath of spring air. I'm going to go, "Oh, okay." Another time I'm going to say, he's in this old rock I found on a beach on Haida Gwaii, thousands of years old. I'm going to have him be in there. But I wind him in because I can. I sew him in to me, and then we'll see what happens next. Right? So he is absent, and I get to inform myself by carrying on certain wonderful things, holding a space, and noticing with the little ones how they are having to move forward and have a space for their daddy, and yet also embrace the life and loves that are before them. So to me, that's honoring the absence. It's not saying it's the absence that is present.
I love that. I love everything you say, actually. So much. And what I'm hearing is both say, and I'd love to really impart this on others that are have experienced what we have and are struggling, whether it's been 10 years, a month, or is that even though we understand what each other has gone through, I hesitate to say, because I've gone through it, I hesitate to say, "I know how you feel, and I have to thank you
Thank you.
because you never said that to me." Even though you experienced what I did in such a short time after, you never said, I know how you feel. And I don't know how you feel. I don't know how anybody else feels. And they don't know how I feel because we all process differently. We adapt differently. We do what we need. We should be doing what we need to do, not what others tell us as to how we should feel. Or, and I'm very slow to anger. I really don't get angry, which I don't know if there's something I should see a doctor about for that. But anger just doesn't happen with me. But it's like if there was an irritant, it would be, those comments. And nobody really in my life has said anything like, well, you should be feeling better right now, or maybe you should go for a walk. Or it's like, no, I want to sit in bed and eat this whole box of cupcakes. But thanks. The best thing you can do right now for me is bring me a cup of tea to wash it all down, pick up the crumbs, and leave me alone. And so I think I've kind of lost track of the initial.
Well, it's
Yes.
trust, isn't it, Gail?
Well, 100%.
It's trust.
Yeah. I've got it back, and then we'll jump into trust. But it was about it's back to space. We've kind of gone full circle back to space. But no one knows how we're feeling, even if they've experienced exactly the same thing. Yes, my point, because we all process differently. And so now you've really piqued my interest on the whole trust piece. And I know there's something that's going to be a real glimmer that comes out of this, Susan. So what are you saying about trust?
Okay, so as we move through the dark, Gail, as we are faced with unfathomability, like I have loved deeply in my life, I have never had this kind of grief before that I can guarantee you it will be a companion with me. This will I will never ever say, oh, I'm glad that happened. It's like, excuse me. However, I get to learn from it. As we take a next step, as I respond to myself, notice where I am, reach out, and other people surround me with the spaciousness of support. Sometimes it's that bag of cupcakes. Sometimes it's just the So we go there, then we take the next step, and we take the next breath. We begin to realize I am shifting, I am changing, and yet I am building on what I already was before. Loving, I had the different, we like goals. We like to help people live their dreams, you and I. We've always done that. And then we go, and what is, and we've always been grateful and all these things. So we go, okay. So now, when everything is thrown up in the air and there's times when it hurts so much and we can be so foggy, we go, I've said to my friends, I said, honestly, pull a thread. I'm unraveling here. I'm just, whew, well, it's just gonna be gone. You realize, no, you're not. It is, I love that word, resilience. And suppleness,
Ooh, that's a good one.
right? There is, and the fact that it will, the idea is that it will continue. And so strength is sometimes, and vulnerability is sometimes. And this is what we're learning to trust. And then other people can trust when we come silently to them, or when we walk with a friend and laugh till we cry, and cry till we laugh, and know that's what was important at that moment. It's not transactional. It's not, and so this equals that. No, we just explore unfathomability of love and loss and understand that something we can't touch affects us deeply. That time has a part in that, and time doesn't really mean it will go away. It will mean some of the early part will lessen. However, it'll still come back with great force, and that's the art of life.
I love that. And it's the art of grief. And I do perceive, again, just my own opinion, that grieving can be perceived as a skill. We grieve many things other than death in life as well. And there is a way to do it effectively. But I think what's important to remember is that there's going to be insurmountable pain, unfathomable pain, and it's all part of the process, and it's just different. Life is different. That's it. And to accept that difference. And I can't recall, Susan, if we had an episode that was about being okay with not being okay.
We did,
So initially, I was learning how to be okay with not being okay. I'm not okay that Colin has gone. Like, that's not okay. And yet, and I don't know this, might I at one point be okay? But what am I going to be okay about? I'm going to be okay with how I've learned to live with him in a different form. Because as I said earlier, I believe he's never far away. And there's one story I'd like to share. I've shared this with you. I'd like to share this with our listeners. A dear sweet friend of Colin's moved across the pond to England, and she was getting used to her new area. And she sent me, this is still, I can't believe it. And maybe it's just me, but I think, well, if this makes me feel good, then I'm sticking with it, right? But she sends me this greeting card, and it was a little cartoon caterpillar. And on the top, it said, "No Colin," and it was spelled properly with one L. Underneath the little caterpillar, it said, "No party." No Colin, no party. No big deal, except she found it on the day of his brother's birthday. And I went, well, okay. Like that, if that's not something concrete, and you know, the little bugger, he does have a great sense of humor, right? But no call and no party. And I went, yeah, you're right, buddy. You're not here. We can't party, but we can. And we do. And party could mean just having a barbecue in the backyard or, you know, but it was just the significance of the fact that it was our eldest son's birthday that day. And I don't know, that just that felt like a little bit, I don't even know, is there a word for it? Unfathomable, I guess we'll use that one.
Mystery.
Mystery, absolutely. But
It,
you
it's
know, oh, sorry, my friend, go ahead, please.
no, that's it. It's just mystery.
Yeah, it is. It's very mysterious. No answers. And I think that's another thing too that helped me grieve. And I'd love your take on how it was for you is that I stopped asking. Well, I don't think I really ever started, but I wasn't going to get into the trap of asking questions to which there were no answers for, because that to me was futile. Biggest one, why did this have to happen to him? Why did it have to happen to our family? If anybody gives me an answer, I'll find $1 million and give it to them. Like it's not even a real thing to even try to figure out. And I didn't want to spend my grieving energy on trying to figure out why he died. That's it. So it just never was an issue. So how were you with the questions to which there are no answers? What was that like for you?
Some of it is I look for how does my grief need me to see the person who has passed from view? And so I ask that question. I ask, what part does love have to play in it? I see Matthew without pain. I see him filled with love. And then I have called on that sometimes when I know his sister had a life-threatening incident a year after he had died, and I said, I need you to go hang out with her. And we don't know whether or not she'll make it to the end of the week. So I had to speak with her about the mystery of we don't know when our death is coming.
Oh, how true.
And to just note, I'm not into fighting it. However, I am into declining the invitation. I have something I'd rather do. So it's like certain questions. If there's anything in your life you could do over, what would it be? I would, in my mind, although I'm polite to the person, I would say, I would wish you hadn't asked that question. I don't find it helpful at all. It's not useful to me. And so I guess the place that I look for instead is to say, how can I take each day and notice where I am and respond as I can in it? That's a question I could answer. How could I do that? And then if I have an invitation from someone to go and be with them, or this last year I did a play that was about a woman who had Alzheimer's and was being drawn out of that state through the use of story. So to notice how can story, the stories we tell, listening to each other's stories, how could that build community? How could that build a greater sense of who we are? Those are questions I can respond to. And sometimes I can feel with Matthew the way I will feel with the wind, a reminder to just let it all fall away. Let it all fall away. Take a break. And then take the next breath, the next step. So that's how I use, instead of questions to go, give me an answer, I ask questions to bring me closer to myself, to the people I have loved and lost, and particularly my son Matthew, and then to those he loves. How can I be closer in whatever way to them, even you, as we look at, there's lots of times we don't get to speak. However, I look at that and instead of saying, why can't we be together? I guess, look at, we're busy. I ask, what would happen if I just acknowledge that I am with you right now? What would that be
Beautiful.
like?
And it's like this. And I love what you said about others. And I want to mention, the people that love Colin and that he loved, and just how that helped my healing. And so I wanted to acknowledge the importance of that, and thank anybody if they will be listening to this episode, like thank anyone and everyone, and know that what really helped me was my love and my concern for them as to how they're also grieving. And even, with my husband and our other children and the grandchildren, like it's everyone is a part of this. And it just feels so much better to be of service. And I think that's why you and I both do what we do as life coaches, is to be of service. And if what we've said here today supports one person in moving even a centimeter ahead or anything for your grief, I hope that we have achieved that. And so as we get close to closing, Susan, there's that phrase that you have, and you say it so eloquently about grief is love that has passed. And I'd like you to finish that part, like say the whole thing, but I love hearing you say that. I think it would be maybe supportive to just leave the viewers with that and see, if it
They
plants
will
any seeds
often,
for them.
they will often say that grief is love that is passed from view. And love is grief that has not yet done so. And love is everywhere within that. Love is both places.
Thank you for
Love
that.
is both places.
Biggest message there is, and let's
And
face it.
that was Stephen Jenkinson
Oh, perfect. Yeah, we
in
want
his
to give
book, Who
credit.
Dies? Who
Okay,
Dies?
who dies? You also have a couple of other resources you'd like to share. I'm just going to write down who dies. I mean, I know there is an answer, but it's everyone
And
eventually.
then there is Alan Wolfelt, Understanding Your Grief, and he has a number of books out. And one of a recent one was 2021. So that's after COVID. Mary Frances O'Connor, The Grieving Brain, 2022, again after COVID. Right? Chris Hartstein, at the Change Zone episode 66. And she works with nonviolent communication. And then for people to look into resources such as Canadian Mental Health Association and other often palliative care centers that will have grieving in-person grieving sessions. It's not for everyone. I happen to have profited it from a couple of them, and yet that wasn't your style.
You're right.
And we just go, fair enough. It's okay. It's We take a little piece and throw it to the other person. This is useful.
It all
Go
works.
for it. Yeah.
People do grow from connection. Anyone out there experiencing this, you're not alone. Like it sometimes, well, we definitely feel like we are, but that we're the only ones. But honestly, people do grow from connection. You and I have both experienced that, Susan, facilitating when people come into class and they've got such, challenging situations that they're in, and then they hear the stories of others and they feel better. Sometimes it might even mean saying it to a stranger while you're waiting for a bus. It's just it's interesting, and it seems I go many places, and there's something that you know about someone that just connects you, but never. Excuse me, I think never is a bit strong. It's a bit strong. When you do feel alone, work at reframing the thoughts and know that it's going to last for a little while, and then it will change. And I've had so many conversations with myself, I get really tired of me sometimes. But if I didn't have conversations with myself, I wouldn't be, I feel I may not be feeling as I do now and have a positive outlook for what the future is going to hold. And I'm joining you in that 70s club in a couple of months here, so I'm right on your tail.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
Well,
why
my friend,
not?
any last words? This has
No.
been just amazing, and thank you for anybody that's taken the time to listen. I know we've talked for quite some time, but again, our intention was to support and help and maybe bring some joy and different perspective, and I feel we've achieved that, and I hope we did. And can't thank you enough. Miss you in the change zone. That was quite the
Yeah.
ride. But I do appreciate your
Yeah.
time, and I appreciate your transparency, your willingness to be vulnerable, because it's so much more meaningful than, doing this alone. Like that, I wish we weren't on this journey together, but we are.
I
And we're kind of making the best of it, and that's
Yeah.
it. So love you to bits, and have a super day, and thanks again, and thank you to everybody, and we'll see you very soon once again on Blind Spots.